Your teenager wants a smartphone or demands one. How do you respond? Don't miss today's Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman.
They live in your house. They live in the same zip code as you, but they're growing up in a foreign country.
We're losing opportunities to influence and to be relating to our kids, but we're also wasting who we might have become if we would have invested more brain power in something, more heart power in something.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Smartphones help us connect with others. They're a tool for learning and growth. They're also a poor substitute for coping skills, emotional intelligence, worship, self-care, and a good night's sleep.
Our guests on this Summer Best Of broadcast believe we need to address issues surrounding smartphones from a biblical perspective. And that's what you're going to hear straight ahead. Thank you for joining us for our broadcast that originally aired in September of last year and was so practical, so timely, and really it affects almost every family.
Well, let's face it, smartphones can be really, really helpful in family life, but they can also be very destructive, not only to the family, but to the individual. So I am excited about this conversation today.
And part of the conversation is the speed of technology and how it's changing. When I was growing up, Gary, the closest to a smartphone I had was a party line. How about you?
I remember the party line, which means everybody on the party line is listening to what you say if they want to.
That's right.
We've come a long ways.
Well, we have. Let me introduce our guest, Dr. Kathy Cook, K-O-C-H is how you spell her last name. She's founder and president of Celebrate Kids Incorporated, a Christian ministry based in Fort Worth, Texas. She speaks around the country and around the world. We've talked with her about screens and teens, eight great smarts, as well as Start with the Heart. She's joined today by David Eaton, who is the president and co-founder of Axis, whose mission is to empower the next generation to think clearly and critically about what they believe and to take ownership of their faith. We have a link for you at 5lovelanguages.com to access.org. Just go to 5lovelanguages.com.
Well, Dr. Cook and David, welcome to Building Relationships.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Great to be here.
David, tell us about Axis. What is it? How did you come up with the idea? What's it all about?
Okay, so just imagine, Dr. Chapman, if C.S. Lewis and MTV, if they made a baby, they would name their baby Axis. And what we mean by that is that Axis is all about culture translation. When you think of your 8 to 18-year-old, they live in your house, they live in the same zip code as you, but they're growing up in a foreign country. So we help parents understand what's going on in their kids' world. Oh, we like to say it like this. There was a young lady who came up to us, and she said to us, "I've only had one real conversation with my dad." And when we heard that, we're like, that is not good. You're having 1,000 conversations a week with your smartphone. How can you only have one real conversation with your dad? But then she smiled, and she says, "I've only had one real conversation with my dad, but we've never stopped having that one conversation."
That's nice.
So, isn't that sweetheart story? So we believe in the 60-year conversation parents had with their kids and the 30-year conversation grandparents had with their grandkids, and our job is to help that conversation be awesome.
Well, I understand that there's a cultural translator and there are parent guides available at access.org. What kind of resources do you offer?
So the culture translator, it's a weekly email that's free. And it says, here are three things that are happening in your kid's world right now and how to have conversations about it. If you feel behind what's going on in your kid's world, the culture translator is for you. So did you know that broccoli means weed? Or do you know who Post Malone is? He's an artist. He's a singer. And again, we'll help you come up to speed with our culture translator. And then our parent guides, we know that parents are busy. And so you should definitely read Kathy Cook's books. And however, if you're just like, I just want to know what Fortnite is and 8 pages or less, that's what our parent guides are for. We have 70 different parent guides, and it's just a kind of a fast masterclass on what's going on in your kid's world.
And those are online also?
Yes, sir. If you go to access.org/radio, we have a free coupon for one of those. It's also linked at 5lovelanguages.com.
Dr. Cook, your organization is Celebrate Kids. How do you serve parents, teachers, and other ministry workers?
Yeah, thanks, Gary. First of all, let me just say thank you, David, for that shout out about my books. And I want to give a shout out to all of your material. Your translator has helped me tremendously. Like, I remember when I read that broccoli is actually weed, like, I didn't know that. And it's valuable to know that as you're listening to these conversations young people are having. So I just love you and Jeremiah and your team there at Access. And Gary, thanks for having me back on the show. At Celebrate Kids, we're passionate that parents raise the children they were given, not the children they wish they had. We love helping you get to know your kids and what turns them on and ticks them off. And how do you parent them wisely? How do you represent the authority that God gives you to them in such a way that they would respond well to you? And it's just we're so passionate for the family. So we do it through public speaking at events and churches and schools and conventions and community rallies. And then I'm an author with Moody, as you know, so privileged for that. And just delight to be a difference maker.
Well, I've had the privilege of speaking with you on several occasions, Dr. Cook, and deeply appreciate all that you're doing to help families in America, and especially parents.
Thank you.
David, you said that the issue with parent-teen relationships isn't unanswered questions, it's unquestioned answers. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it isn't unanswered questions. We will always have unanswered questions. The smarter you get, the more unanswered questions you have. We think the issue is unquestioned answers. So what have we assumed to be true, but we haven't said, why do I think this way? Why do I believe what I believe? And since we're talking about smartphones today, I think a big unquestioned answer is, when should you get your kid a phone? Should you get your kid a phone? And so I have a question for you, Dr. Chapman. At what age did you get your driver's license?
16.
And did you get it on your 16th birthday or a few months after that?
I would have gotten it on my 16th birthday, January the 10th. However, I talked my father into taking me to the driver's station. It was pouring down snow, and it was closed when we got there. So I had to wait till the next day.
Oh.
But I was always grateful that my father at least said, okay, son, I'll take you down there.
Now, question, have you noticed that when kids are turning 16, that they're not getting their driver's license on their 16th birthday come rain, snow, sleet, or hail? Has anybody else noticed that?
I've noticed that, David.
I don't know that I've noticed that because I don't have any teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like students are waiting till late in their 16th year, 17th year, even 18 years old before they're getting a driver's license. And we were talking about the unquestioned answers. Well, I think one of the main reasons they're waiting is because the smartphone is the new driver's license. It is giving them the agency they need, the freedom to be with their friends whenever they want to be with their friends. And so it's causing the next generation to postpone adulthood, wait till they drive. And I think something else that's very interesting with that is, as a parent, you would never give your kids the keys to the car when they turn 16 without an adequate level of training. I mean, I think anyone listening to this can remember, like, you had to drive, depending on what state you're from, I mean, 40, 50 hours in the car with your parent. There's a written test. There's classes you had to go to. There's a driving test. There is so much that you have to do before you get the car keys to drive the car. However, when it comes to the smartphone, it's just like, hey, you're 10 years old. Hey, you're 12. Hey, it's your birthday. And actually a secret, a lot of parents get their kids a phone because they don't have landlines at home. So they want to leave their 10-year-old at home so that they can go, you know, on a date or go to the grocery store. And they're just like, I just wish you had a phone so I could contact you if something bad happened. So, again, I think one of the biggest unquestioned answers right now is all around the smartphone and discipling our kids to be ready to use it with wisdom.
Dr. Cook has written a number of helpful books. She's the founder and president of Celebrate Kids Incorporated, a Christian ministry based in Fort Worth, Texas. And David Eaton is joining us as well from Access. You can find out more about them at that website, fivelovelanguages.com.
Well, David, what is a smartphone? And what is it? What does it do? Most of the people who are listening know that, but there are a few older people like me who do not know everything a smartphone can do.
Think of a smartphone like a modern Swiss Army knife. It fits in your pocket, and it can do anything. I like to affectionately call it a pocket rectangle. It's almost like another appendage. If you remove the smartphone from a 17-year-old, they'll feel like you have, like, amputated one of their arms. So, and there's more technological capacity in that phone than there was to put a man on the moon. I mean, it's just this incredible innovation of human collaboration, and I'm assuming that most people who are listening to this have one in their pocket right now.
Let me expand on that, David. I often also use the jackknife analogy, and that's one of the reasons that it's so hard when we do take it away from kids. It is their connection to their tribe, their people, including a mom and a dad and, you know, maybe a coach that they need to be able to get a hold of. It also is their calculator. It is their map. It is their phone book. It is the dictionary. It is, you know, the web. And so when we talk about addiction, addiction is real, and we can come back and talk about that if you guys want to. But that, again, is something that we need to understand. So I love to recommend that moms and dads get their children an alarm clock, an old-fashioned actual alarm clock, so that they don't have to have the phone by the bed. And we can buy them a dictionary and a thesaurus. And no joke, we can get them an old-fashioned calculator so that when we ask that their phone be put up to be charged at night, when we have a digital-free space and place, they're not going to look at us and go, but I have to have my phone. It's my calculator. I'm working on math. So that's something for us to consider.
Mm.
And it's their lifeline, too. It's their lifeline to social activities. So I always think it's good to think, to feel what it feels like. Try to feel what it felt like to be a 15-year-old and be left out. For those of you listening, just imagine that party that you weren't invited to, that birthday party you weren't included in, that time you got grounded and your parents wouldn't let you go to the New Year's Eve thing or whatever, and just it felt terrible to be left out. Well, if your sixth grader doesn't have a phone, they're going to feel left out of 50% of the conversations that happen at their school. And so usually you would just come home from school and, like, your relationships are done. You know, you're at home. There's some peace that comes from that. But now, because of the smartphone, you come home from school and the conversations light up. So like Kathy says, it can do anything, and it definitely ties them into their relationships with their friends.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to comprehend everything that's available on the smartphone. You know, Chris and I go back to the time where it was all landlines.
The thing is, Gary, you use, when I saw your smartphone, I was like, Gary, you had a smartphone before I had a smartphone. So you use it. It's just that you use it for what you use it for and not everything else, right?
Yeah, I'm not married to my smartphone, okay? And in fact, sometimes people complain to me and they say, I sent you a text and you didn't respond to me. And it's only been a day. I mean, give me a break, you know? Because if you don't respond immediately, people are like, what's wrong with him? Did he not get my text? Well, this is an exciting topic, and I really am glad that both of you are with us today to talk about it. Let me ask you this. On a scale of 0 to 10, how much of a struggle is this with parents and teenagers today?
You know, for some, it's a 20. It's way beyond 10. And for others, it's a 2 or 3 because they know their family values. They know their children. And they have been brave to say, no, you're not mature enough yet. You're not showing enough respect that we would trust you with this device. The no is the no. And they've chosen that boundary and they've defended themselves and they've thought about it before they needed to think about it, so that in the heat of the battle, they weren't manipulated into a quick yes that they then regret. So I think it really is a little bit of everything. There certainly are some parents that are angry and frustrated and kids who are as well for any number of reasons. I love to tell parents that you can always step back. Like, it's okay to maybe give a young child a phone who is going to be left alone, but she doesn't need the internet on her phone, and she doesn't need games on her phone, and she needs three numbers, 911, mom, dad, maybe a neighbor, maybe a grandmother, so 5 or 6 people in the contact list. And if you've gone beyond that and it was premature and now your child is showing that, you know, he or she is not mature enough to handle the gaming or handle the social media, handle the texting, then guess what? You look them in the eye and you say, you know what? I love you too much to allow this to continue. We made some mistakes. We're not bad and you're not a bad kid. We're making some decisions based on what we're observing in your character, and we're going to make some changes here because we love you too much to allow this to continue. So parents who are willing to back out and stand up for themselves, It might feel like a 10, 12, or a 20, you know, dilemma for a while, but then it's going to come back, I think, to a point of less discord and more contentment, but you got to work at it. David, what have you seen in your work?
To me, it's an 11. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a struggle is this with parents and teens today? Like you said, if you're a parent who's like ahead of the curve on this, that's awesome. The smartphone can be one of the greatest tools to disciple your kids because it's going to force conversations. It's going to make you – it's like the smartphone's like the new university. A lot of the ideas that students didn't even have coming at them until they were off to college, it's now in their pocket. But to tell a story, I was with a dad, and he's like, we spend $3,000 to $4,000 a year on all of our family's devices. So all of our pocket rectangles and all of the data plans that go with them. And he said, only to get in a yelling match once a week with my kids. And so it's just, there are so many different conversations. I'm a very part-time youth pastor. I was over at one of the youth homes, their mother asked me to come over and talk to the family about smartphones. And I was like, you know, these kids love me, this mom, she likes me, it's great. I'll just go over and we'll just have a sane conversation, a rational conversation about this phone. When I walked in the door, the kids wouldn't even look at their mother. They had their back turned to her at the kitchen table. They were crying, not sad tears, but like hot, I am so angry. And the first thing they said is that, David, you just don't understand my mom. You just don't understand. And then as I tried to say, well, let's talk about this. Let's be reasonable. It ended as an utter failure. And as I was walking down the steps away from their house, the young lady, the 16-year-old, she said, David, the stricter the parent, the sneakier the child. And the moral of the story is I failed. And also, that young lady ended up getting two iPhones, one for her mom's house and one for her dad's house. Her parents were divorced, and so the parents were actually fighting over this. So I would say there is a lot of fear and a lot of insecurity surrounding this very powerful device.
That whole issue of fear, because I think many parents, you know, they've heard all of this, they've seen some of it themselves, they've heard stories from other parents. And they do. They are fearful of what the smartphone is going to do to their children. So how does a parent not just simply act out of fear and maybe overreact? How do we manage the fear factor?
I'll start with this comment, and then I'm really eager to hear David's take on this. Let's respond in prayer. Let's respond with opening the Word of God, because that would not be God's intent that we would be fearful, that we would give that much power to a device in our pocket. He would want us to interact with love as our compelling motivation and not fear, not shame, not blame. So I'd love for us first to pray, to turn to the Lord and ask Him to resurrect within us a love and a belief in ourselves and our children, and to have the hard conversations that are causing the fear. I'm not saying that you avoid that, but let's start with God and what He would say to us about our anxiety and our stress and our fear. That's where I would start.
I love you, Kathy. I just want to give you like a standing ovation every time. You have such a great ability to bring it back to the heart.
Oh, thank you.
Of the issue. When I think about fear, I think about movies. And something that creates a great movie is some kind of primal challenge, that whether it's a shark chasing you through the water, somebody's kidnapping your kids, it's the end of the world, it's something like that. And I think the smartphone, in a very strange way, represents something primal. It represents something that could take our kids away from us, that could get them to believe something that's wrong, that could hurt them. And so, I mean, you're going to have sensations of fear. It's going to hit your body. You're going to when I feel fear, I feel it in the center of my chest. And so, what I would encourage you to do is, if you feel that fear coming up, pretend it's a volleyball, and you're holding the volleyball in both of your hands, and you're holding it, you know, right where your chest is. And this is just like that represents the fear, and it's not really a real volleyball. And then pray and invite the Holy Spirit into that. Because like you said, Dr. Chapman, you don't want to be leading out of fear, especially when it comes to the phone. Because what happens is, let's say your kids say something, you know, really scary to you. Like, I saw two boys kissing today at school, or my friends are vaping. What do you think about that? Or you hear them use some term and you don't know what it is. It would be easy to lash out. And when you lash out and say, what are you doing? What are you thinking about that? Why are you saying that? All of a sudden, they're going to say, it's not safe to tell my parents about what I'm facing at school or on the phone. So as a parent, try to practice your I'm not shocked face. So, you know, your kids say something and, you know, and they're like, oh, my favorite artist is Billie Eilish. And you're like, okay. And then you go check out the lyrics to some of Billie's songs or watch a music video of what she has created. And you come back and you freak out. And then all of a sudden they're going to say, I'm never going to tell my mom that again. However, if you practice your I'm not shocked face, you can ask great questions. Be curious about their world. Pretend it's a foreign country and you're a visitor and you want to understand what Gen Z is like. And then something that should just be a recurring phrase in your home is to tell your kids that they can tell you anything. So say, you can tell me anything, good stuff, bad stuff, hard stuff. Just know I'm your mom, I'm your dad. You can tell me anything. I'm going to be fair. You know, and you don't, doesn't mean you get away with everything, but I am in your corner and I love you.
I'm on your side. Now, on the other hand, both of you believe that smartphones can improve a relationship between parents and teenagers. So let's talk a little bit about the positive side.
Yeah, I mean, they're incredible tools. I think it's tempting from a non-Christian worldview to say that, and most people to say that the phone is neutral. And that any technology is neutral. And again, I think a lot of Christians would say, "Oh, it's neutral." And I think they're well-meaning. However, I think if we look at Scripture, it says that God made the world, and He made the world very good. We're supposed to cultivate it, protect it, take care of it, be fruitful, and multiply. And then there is this curse that happens because of our disobedience. So instead of starting off, if you don't want to be nagging with your kid's phone, don't start off just saying it's neutral or just always thinking about what's wrong with it. Start off by celebrating how ingenious it is. And start off by celebrating what's awesome about it. Then you can bring in this idea of the curse, and then you bring in this idea of, you know, Jesus came so that we could be redeemed. How can we as a family redeem this phone? That's the big picture, but parents are, I mean, there are certain conversations you can start via text with your kid, which are awesome. There are fun apps that you can use. There's scheduling capabilities. And man, when your 14-year-old is done with soccer practice, it's just nice to be able to call them to figure out which field they're at so you can pick them up.
Yeah, my wife and my granddaughter text each other once a day. She's in college, and from the day she started her freshman year, they've texted each other just one or two brief texts back and forth, just touching base. And then every Sunday, my granddaughter calls her grandmother and has a little chat with her. Wow, that's powerful. Yeah,
I love that. I have two nieces and a nephew, all married and living in other parts of America. And I love getting texts from them. I used to resent it. I used to think, call me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm your aunt. Call me. Or don't put something on Facebook for the world to see, including me. I should have gotten a private message. I am your aunt. Come on, you know, honor me. And like totally, that's where I was. Now I'm grateful for any kind of communication. And I've chosen to honor who they are. They're young. This is their way. It's not their fault. It's how they've grown up. I'm honored to receive a text, and praise God, I can text them back and they can text me back, and we can have fabulous conversations. I've chosen as an older adult to not expect them to walk toward me. That's arrogant. I am willing to walk toward them, and that's healthy.
Yeah, as soon as my daughter was born, my mom bought an iPad. Boom. I mean, and she wanted to FaceTime that baby. And we live in a world where grandparents live hundreds of miles away.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mom has this little book about, like, devotionals with grandma. She'll read it to kids every now and then. It's just awesome.
Well, this is an exciting conversation, and I do hope that our listeners hear what we just discussed in that last section, and that is the positive traits of the smartphone and how it can really enhance relationships between parents and children, grandparents and children, in any relationship for that matter. But we also know there's a downside, and there are things available on the smartphone that can be detrimental to a child's development, both mentally and spiritually as well. Are there filters that can be used on a smartphone like they used to be used on televisions or desktops or laptops?
Gary, there are a ton of different filters and apps that can help you monitor your child's phone, but there is no replacement for trust. And, you know, having a teenager live in your home is like having tech support live inside your house. There's just going to be things that they are better at than their parents, and they're going to know more about it. So at Axis, we like to think of the 7 smartphone domains. The first 3 are purely manual, like what are our non-negotiables? What's always wrong to do on the phone, like looking at porn or sexting or sneaky apps? Then the next 2 are location and time, and these are things that have to be decided as a family. Like Dr. Cook mentioned earlier, should you have phones in the bedroom? Should you have phones in the bedroom at night? Now, let's say you say no phones in the bedroom at night. Then the next question is the question of time. How much time? And you can measure that as well. And then the last 4, internet, app store, texting, and social media. Okay, so I just said 7 things. They're complicated. And with this very good but cursed phone that we have that we can be a part of redeeming, it's just got a lot of facets to it. So the big apps that you got to know, 1 is if you have an iPhone, iOS 12 has a built-in app from Apple called Screen Time. This allows you as a parent to put bedtimes on your kids' phones, to have limits on time and limits on certain apps. It's incredible, and you can control it all from your phone. If you have Android, it's something called Google Family Link. And again, you can control your child's Android phone from your phone. And these apps came out in 2018, but I'm still shocked at how many parents don't know about them. So that initially allows you to limit some of the things, and then when it comes to actually observing, when you give your kid a phone, it doesn't have to have the internet on it. You can turn it off. You can turn off the app store. But at some point, just like with a car, you don't want to be in the passenger seat their entire life. You want them to have some independence that they earn from being responsible. So some ways to transition that, there's something called Bark.us. It allows you to monitor what goes on social media with them, and also an app called Covenant Eyes. Now, again, I mentioned all these. The point is like, the phone is complicated. It should be thought of like a vehicle, like a car. There's just a lot of rules around it. So whether it's iOS 12, Screen Time, Bark.us, or Covenant Eyes, those are some places that you can start as a parent.
So a parent's listening, and they're hearing this for the first time, and they're saying, oh, I forgot what he said. How do they find this out?
I would go to axis.org/smartphones. And we have a 4 free video series that will take you through the 4 essential smartphone conversations. We also have something called the 30-day reboot. I hate to just say that, but again, when I got my lunch handed to me as a youth pastor, being at my youth group's home and talking to that young lady who said, the stricter the parent, the sneakier the child, I went down to the basement of my church, got a giant whiteboard out. Kathy knows I love whiteboards. And I just wrote down, what are all the conversations that are material that you could have with your kid when it comes to the smartphone? And there are about 100 of them.
Hmm.
So it's an amazing device. And again, we've kind of chronicled that at Axis. But just from a big level, non-negotiables, location and time, and then internet, app store, texting, and social media are all settings inside of the phone.
Now, here's the million-dollar question. Here's the question all parents ask at some juncture. At what age should I get my kid a phone? What do you say, Dr. Cook?
David knows that my answer is they should get a phone when they need a phone, not when they want one. So again, if you have a son or daughter who babysits and is going to be at someone's home and there's no landline, they need a phone. But again, they don't need internet and apps and all the phones, all the numbers in the world. They need a few. If your child is running track, maybe that child needs to have a phone. There are some families, they have a sibling phone. They have one phone for the 3 siblings and they sign it out. The son gets it one night, the daughter the next morning for whatever activity. I also think, and I know David agrees here, it's totally important that we look at things like maturity. You know, not all 14-year-olds are the same. If you have a 14-year-old who's showing you a lot of respect and is obedient and follows through and is other-centered, that child is maybe more ready for a phone than a 14-year-old who's self-centered, belligerent, and doesn't follow through on anything you ask. That child doesn't deserve a phone or earn a phone, if you will. We should look at things like maturity, their behavior, the level of respect, how do they treat people? What's their attitude? I would look at like a spiritual age, if I can put it that way, before I would look at a chronological age as a way of determining it, along with that idea of need.
And then to up the ante, the next question is, at what age should I get my kids social media?
Mm.
Those are the two biggest questions we get at Axis. And again, I completely agree with Kathy. And I think, unfortunately, that question is just the wrong question. What age should I get my kid a phone? Because it assumes two things that are false. The first thing it assumes is they don't have a phone already. Now, they may not have their own personal phone, but if they have friends in high school or junior high, their friends will have phones. And they're just one friend away from a kid saying, hey, look at this pic on my phone, and standing and sticking that pocket rectangle right in front of your son or daughter's face. And so they have to know what to do when their friends put that in front of them and how to choose righteousness and love righteousness at that point. And then the other side, what age should I get my kid a phone? Just because you get your kid a phone when they turn 16 or 14 or whatever age you determine doesn't mean they have to get 100% access to it. You can give them a phone that, like I said earlier, doesn't have the internet, doesn't have the app store. You can even shut down texting now because of iOS 12 screen time. However, you want to give them a path, because as soon as they get that phone, they're going to want to have an Instagram account. They're going to want to have a Snapchat account. And you need to say, okay, like, let's work towards you getting an Instagram account. What is it going to take? What do I need to see from you? What characteristics do I want? And what level of openness do I need to see you show me now? That would be the goal on that.
Well, when you go to get the driver's license, however, most states have a set time. In North Carolina, it's 16. That's assuming that every 16-year-old has the same amount of abilities to drive a car. That's probably a false assumption, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, how has that worked for us?
Yeah. But they also have this rite of passage that happens, that you can't just get a driver's license because you want one. I mean, actually, one of the coolest opportunities as a parent is the 40 to 50 hours of drive time that you get with your kid when they have driver's ed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're both in the car there, you're focused on the road, and it's a great place to talk. However, when you get a kid a phone, there's no rite of passage involved with it. It's just like, here it is in a box. Good luck.
Yeah.
I have to jump in here and say, yeah, it's a good place to have conversations. It's also a great place for dad to be able to scream, look out for that mail. There goes the side mirror. You know, the other thing, as I'm listening to you talk and having kids in this age and graduating now into their 20s, is the rapid change of technology. What you just said about iOS 12 may change next week, because everything is being updated. And in order to stay up with everything that is happening, you've got to be connected with that. And that's the other thing that scares a lot of parents. It's like, I don't know what's going to change with this within the day.
And that's why Axis exists. And so the best thing you can do is just talk to your kids about this stuff, because they'll be your best inside track. And if you have that open conversation, it's awesome. Second best thing is to jump on the Culture Translator at Axis. Grab one of our parent guides. And the whole time, make sure you're using Kathy's resources to tie you back into the heart of the gospel throughout the whole thing. But yeah, it's intimidating, and the culture gap has only gotten wider. But you have to, again, treat it. Think of yourself as a missionary, and think of them as a foreign country. And you are curious, you are kind, you are interested, you want to learn about their cultural artifacts. And it's because they live, again, in the same zip code, but in an entirely different world.
What kids tell me all the time is that if my parents want to talk to me when I'm older, they should have talked to me when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
If my parents care now what I think, they should have cared when I was little. So for those of you who are listening who have still younger children, praise God that you're here with us today. Please be alert and fully present to your younger children. Play with them and walk with them and ride bikes with them and listen to their heartbeat and pray with them at night and be open to what's going on the playground or what happened in their homeschool co-op. get involved, because a lot of kids have said to me, you know, Dr. Kathy, I turned 13 and all of a sudden they care about everything I'm doing. I turned 13. What did I do overnight to convince them that I'm a bad kid? Why are they interrogating me now? Where were they last year? I went to a birthday party a month ago and it was a terrible experience and nobody was available to me then. So I don't say that lightly, but all four of us here really want this relationship to be positive and affirming and influential and a blessing. And it start the earlier we start, the better. It's never too late. It's never too late. We can apologize and forgive and start over and say, hey, you're my guinea pig. You know, could you give me another chance? But if you're listening with younger kids or younger grandkids, start now caring about the deep stuff so that when you're concerned, they'll listen to you.
And if you can model a growth mindset with them, when I'm speaking with students at high schools and we talk about the phone, there are so many times when they say, my parents are on their phones all the time. Why are they expecting me to live differently? And so even as you start to understand more about the phone, for you to say, look, I'm trying to figure this thing out. I need your help. I'm trying to grow. I want our families to have, again, point towards something positive. I want our family to have a deeper relationship. So that means that I'm not on email during dinner and you're not keeping your snap streak alive. And when you model that growth mindset, then they'll say, I kind of want to come along for the ride. But many situations, students are like, why are my parents putting all these rules on me when they're addicted to their phone too?
Amen.
Dr. Cook, I know that you care about kids. You want to celebrate them. But what David just said a moment ago, that they look to us for the cues. We can say till we're blue in the face, put your phone down. You got to put it in here and you can't watch it. They're looking at us and what we're doing. We're glued to it as adults. They say, you may tell me what to do, but boy, I see what you're doing.
Exactly. And that's a legitimate issue, right? Because there's supposed to be integrity and credibility. And so let's admit that there's addiction here and there's habit and all of that. And, you know, one of the things that really concerns me about a parent's use of a phone really is the same with the child. I think parents are wasting so much time and we're not ever going to become who we could have been. So it's not, you know, let's role model and let's have integrity. And if we expect them to stop texting during dinner, then we better not. And this is an opportunity, by the way, to teach them the difference between want and need. Maybe you have a need to have your phone on. For instance, I was at dinner last night with someone and I needed my phone on and with me because I was trying to figure out some transportation issues for today. And I said to my friend, I'm so sorry that I need my phone out and on, but this is what's going on. That's very different from somebody who wants it available because they're afraid they're going to be bored of a conversation and they're going to have to escape, you know, into their device. So parents can teach the need and the want coin, really important. And again, back to this idea that we're wasting so much time, whether it's gaming or social media or Pinterest or a sports website, and we're losing opportunities to influence and to be relating to our kids, but we're also wasting who we might have become if we would have invested more brain power in something, more heart power in something.
Would it be safe to say that the smartphone is in the process of replacing television?
The smartphone is sort of replacing television, but television is in its own third wave right now with streaming television. So now because of Netflix and Prime and Hulu, we can binge watch, we can watch things whenever we want, and because we have a phone, we can carry that TV show with us wherever we go. And so one of the interesting commercials by HBO recently was all about how you don't have to watch TV with your parents anymore and how liberating that is. Now, whether that's because you're watching TV on your smartphone, your iPad, your laptop, or on the TV that's hanging in your room is different. But yeah, this device has been so disruptive to so many industries.
But we are, as a culture, entertainment-centered. That's a part of what I heard you say, Dr. Cook.
Yes. Yes, we want everything to be fun and easy, and we're afraid of boredom. It's not healthy. That's why kids are so bored so quickly in educational settings, and the dropout rate is just frightening, both from church and from school. But that's not life. Happiness isn't a promise to anyone.
Yeah. Now, I've seen parents who actually give their preschool children a phone, mainly to keep them occupied. What would you say to that?
I understand why a parent wants to give a young child a phone. It's the pacifier or the security blanket of the day. Parents need to invest in their children and not be lazy, frankly. I hope that comes across okay. Don't own that if that isn't yours to own. But I want you to play with your kids and find a different way to engage with them. And ask yourself, when are you handing them the phone? Or when are you handing them a device to keep them occupied? Is it when you have ignored them and their whining is legitimate? Are you on your device scrolling social media? I actually have watched mothers nurse their babies while they're scrolling social media with their other hand. And I just want to scream at them. But of course, I don't because like I'm mature. But I just want to say, you know, hello, you're missing relationship bonding times. And educationally, it's extremely dangerous. What we know now about eye development, brain development, literacy development, it is not wise. Children should not at that age be on devices nearly as often. Even developmentally appropriate apps where you think your children are learning the colors and the shapes and the letters and the numbers, it's not, it's been proven to not be effective. So I want us to regroup. And I'm going to go back to what I said a minute ago. Ask yourself, when are you doing it and what is causing your child to be demanding and needing that device? Because I bet there's something else you could do that would be healthier for both of you.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our hour, but let me ask each of you this question. Advice to parents on how to begin a conversation with your teenager. How do you open up this whole area and how do you do it in a positive way?
We need to do it. I love the question. We need to just do it. We need to stop waiting and do it. Sometimes talk in the dark because children tell me all the time, teenagers tell me they don't like looking into our eyes when it's a serious, hard conversation and they know that they've disappointed or scared us. So maybe at bedtime, maybe in the car where you're all captured and no one can leave. And again, there's not an eye contact stress. That can be a positive place for a conversation. Apologize if you need to, if you've allowed things to go too long. Say, hey, I'm going to be brave tonight. We've got to talk about something. You know, blame it on the radio interview. I heard some people. You know, maybe get the podcast and let your kids listen with you and let us be the ones that begin the conversation with you. I love you too much to allow it to continue. It's nobody's fault. It is what it is. But we're going to reboot and we're going to do this better from now on. Let's just do it.
At Axis, we like to think of experience, curiosity, and kindness. That's one of our friends named Chris Bruno taught us that. And so to think, when you're having a conversation with your kid, what is the experience like right now? Is it a hostile environment? Is it a relaxed environment? Are they exhausted? Because sometimes at 11 p.m. at night, when you're exhausted is when they're ready to talk. And so experience and curiosity, just being really interested in their world. And then kindness is this idea, can you have a non-judgmental conversation with your kids? I mean, look, you're their parent, you're not their friend. You have certain authority in their life, and that's important. However, just are they able to tell you anything? And maybe a great way to think about this is, were you able to tell your parents anything? And if you weren't, why were you not able to do that? Because you want to have that open line of conversation where you're interested in their world, where they seek out you for advice, and where they feel safe enough because they know that you're in their corner, that they can tell you anything.
Well, this has been a significant conversation, and I'm sure that the parents who have listened have heard things and heard people speaking into their lives, because all the parents I know, particularly those of teenagers, are struggling with this whole issue. Thanks not only for being with us today on the program, but thanks for the resources that both of you have made available to parents. And I hope that the parents who are listening will take advantage of that. There's a link to your resources at our website. So thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Thanks for having us.
And as I said at the beginning of the program, it's timely, it's practical. And more than that, we hope it spiritually encouraged you as an adult or as a teenager as you've listened. Dr. Kathy Cook and David Eaton have joined us. You can find out more about them if you go to the website, 5lovelanguages.com. Again, go to 5lovelanguages.com. Now, coming up next week, our Summer Best Of series continues as we get out to Toolbox. It's a do-it-yourself guide to building a family that lasts. That's coming up next week, right here.
Our thanks today to Janice Todd and Steve Wick for their work behind the scenes. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.